Just to make myself a little bit more relaxed, there's something I do when I feel ill at ease, and that's I tell jokes. So this is a saintly joke. This is a saintly joke. You know, we often picture the saints on our stained glass windows or in the books, and they never, ever look happy. In fact, they look so dour. I would not want to have them in my house for coffee, tea, or anything. They always look cranky. This goes from even our founders, reformer founders, Calvin, you know, I don't want to tell you what he looks like he's suffering from. I mean, they really look, they never look happy. And yet they were very joyous people. I looked up some funny stories. One was, we know that one of the early people in, I think it was 400, St. Augustine, he affected the whole Roman Catholic Church and Calvin and Luther. They were all Augustinian. But Augustine had trouble with his personal sexual life. He had a lot of girlfriends. So his prayer was, "Dear God, please give me the gift of chastity, but not yet." And then I know many of us lived through Vatican II, and we were very familiar with Pope John the 23rd, who really changed the path of the church. I mean, he opened doors and windows, and we were all going to be one, and it was a great time, and hopefully we'll get back to that time. But he had a wonderful sense of humor. A journalist asked him, "Your Holiness, how many people work in the Vatican?" And his response, "About half of them." And then he was asked another, you know, they questioned him because there's an Italian wonderful tradition that they close the offices in the Vatican every afternoon. This is true, or was true, when he was Pope. So the question was asked, "Your Holiness, we understand that the Vatican is closed in the afternoon and people don't work then." "Ah, no," said the Pope, "the offices are closed in the afternoon. People don't work in the morning." And the best one was before he became Pope. You know, he was a big shot. He was an ambassador in Paris. And he, as a cleric, as a, you know, a clergyman, an important clergyman, was invited to this dinner in Paris. And right across from him was this very provocatively dressed woman showing a great deal of cleavage. Someone turned to him and said, "Your Eminence, what a scandal. Aren't you embarrassed that everyone is looking at her?" And he said, "No, no, no, no. Everyone is looking at me to see if I am looking at her." So, you know, these holy people had tremendous senses of humor. They didn't take themselves seriously. And that's something for us to remember when we use the term saint. Recently, I came across a book by a Lutheran pastor, Nadia Bowles Weber. The book, in fact, is a bestseller. It's called Accidental Saints, and it's subtitled Finding God in All the Wrong Places. Now, in this book, the author talks about early on, this is Pastor Nadia, early on, she was commissioned by the Lutheran Church to found her own church because she's a very unique individual. She was originally a stand-up comic. She had addiction problems. She was covered with tattoos, and yet she was very, very, her sense of the gospel was sincere and deep and filled with integrity, so she had a lot to offer, a specific type of person. So she was going to found, in fact, it's one of the fastest growing churches, Lutheran churches in America today. It's called the Church for All Saints and Sinners, and it's in Denver. So early on, she was walking with a friend, trying to think, was there a model that she could have, someone she could hold up to, someone she could learn from who started a church? And lo and behold, as they were walking in Denver, there was a statue of Alma White. Now, she was the first African-American bishop in Denver. Ah, Nadia thought, she's someone I could follow. So Nadia decided to investigate. No one ever heard of, maybe any of you ever hear of Alma White? I mean, I never heard of her. So anyway, Nadia did some research, and she was born in 1862, and she died in 1940. Nadia said, that's great. She was the first female bishop in the United States. Terrific. Noted for her feminism. Better yet, noted, too, for her association with the KKK, her anti-Catholicism, her anti-Pentecostalism, and her hostility to immigrants. Well, Pastor Nadia had planned to put a picture of Alma White on her All Saints table. She had a table where everyone would bring in pictures of people they thought were saints, and she wanted to put Alma White. But now, what was she going to do? She wasn't so sure what she should do with this woman, with Alma White. In our hearts and minds, don't we often configure two separate categories? Don't we need two separate containers, one beautiful, bright, maybe glass, sunny, so everyone can see through it, for people whom we deem worthy and good and saintly, people we love. We think they're great. And then the other box looks something like a beat-up garbage pail for the people whom we wouldn't think of even putting near this treasured box, for the people who are the sinners, who do wrong things, for the people whom we judge unworthy. Now, I was faced with a related situation a few years ago, and this situation came back to my memory because this will be the third anniversary of the Sandy Hook killings in Newtown, Connecticut. It's in December. And when I read that it was the third year, it brought me back to the church that I pastored in Norwood, New Jersey. And I remember the Sunday after that horrific event. It was like all of the air was sucked. And I had met with the worship and music committee, and we decided, there were two things. We decided that the names of each of the people who were killed would be, and their ages would be read, and a bell would toll. And we also had a tree, like the branches of a tree we took from outside, and on the tree we hung, I believe it was stars. I don't know if it was stars or outlines of people. And on each star, we wrote the name of one of the people killed and their age, and we had that in the front. It was a way for us to work through our grief as we remembered and faced the horror of that time. Every church, I think, had its own style of marking the event. I'm sure that Pastor Deborah and Leonia had a way to remember that event. But like many of you, I was appalled by what Adam Lanza had done. I couldn't even look at his photo in the newspaper or on the news. But something, Jesus' grace, nudged me to dig deeper. So I did what I usually do. I decided to read about him. He was 20 years old, 6 foot tall, 112 pounds. He suffered anorexia. He was on a very powerful antidepressant, the side effect of which is suicide and homicide. His mother had a hobby of guns. He was diagnosed as paranoid schizophrenic, and he would go through boxes of tissues every day because he wouldn't put his hand on a doorknob. He was a sick young man who did an awful thing, and he was another victim. When I read about him, I was certain that on that horrific day in Connecticut, Jesus, like you heard in the third reading today, Jesus sat in the hallway of that school and wept for all of the people who died that day. Jesus wept. I mean, the translation, the real Greek translation of that is not just wept, he groaned from within. I mean, you're talking about a sob, you know, not just a little tear, a sob. I mean, we've all been there. He sobbed. And so on that Sunday, there were 28 names read, 28 tolls of the bell, and the last one, after a very long pause, Adam Lanza, age 20. We may, some of us, want to ignore people like Alma White and Adam Lanza, putting them in that garbage bin for sinners and shutting the lid tight. But every Sunday, we come and we gather and we hear passages that say the poor are blessed and the rich are cursed. And prostitutes and tax collectors make wonderful dinner guests. It seems that it's us that have a need for black and white categories, good people and bad people, saints and sinners. We have that need. But what, my friends, if that is not true religion? What if that's the sin? Now, knowing what category to place harmful substances in might help us know what's safe and what's not. But knowing what category to place ourselves and others in doesn't help us know God. What makes us and others saints of God is not our ability to be saintly, and that's not what we're celebrating today, but rather it's God's ability to work through us, flawed sinners that we are. The title saint is always conferred, never earned. Paul puts it well in his letter to the Philippians. He writes, "For it is God who is at work in you, enabling you both to will and to work for his good pleasure." All the saints I have ever known are people who inadvertently stumble into redemption as if they're looking for something else at the time. People maybe who have had a little drinking problem and managed to get over it and help others do the same. People who are as kind as they are hostile. People who have calm, easy days and frantic, frustrating, really difficult days. What we celebrate in the saints is not their piety or their perfection. What we celebrate is the fact that we believe in a God who gets redemptive, who gets holy things done in this world through, of all things, you and me. All of us are flawed. And in a few moments, I will be reading off the names of people that you will write on that piece of paper. And we celebrate God's tireless working through them and through us, messy folk that we are. Now, that's my personal experience. I mean, I keep making the same mistakes over and over and over. I say no when I should say yes. I say yes when I should say no. I stumble into holy moments and thin places and don't even realize it until they're over. I can be guarded, I could be distant, and then I could accidentally say the right thing at the right moment without even realizing it. Sometimes I get caught up in little things, forgetting what really matters. And then I show tenderness when it's needed. I continue to be the person on whom, in whom, God is at work. We, you and I, are saints. Not cranky, dour-looking saints who meditate 20 hours a day and always shake that judgmental finger. You know, the saints, you know, you take an extra piece of cheesecake or an extra glass of wine and they're right there. Not someone who we wouldn't want to spend an afternoon with, much less share coffee with. We are called to be flesh and blood, honest to God, human saints, and saintly humans. And we have, today is a day of gratitude. It's wonderful, November, the beginning of the month of Thanksgiving. It's a day of gratitude for us. Grateful for us to be aware of those moments when God is working in us, not just here when we're in the pews, you know, all during the week. You know, when something beautiful is done through you, despite you having that no good, really terrible, bad day. Or when God's love and forgiveness makes you feel lousy until you forgive and love someone else. Or when you're forgiven by someone when you didn't even deserve it. Or when you turn to these people around you looking for support when things like a school shooting happens in Connecticut. When you come to get support, this is God working through you. When you end up loving someone you wouldn't choose out of a catalog, because God wants to teach you something about love. Or when you're tired, feeling taken for granted, maybe a little bit resentful at being asked one more time to do that chore. Or pick up that gift, or pick up that child, or take a sick friend somewhere, or do an errand for someone for the umpteenth time, and you do it as cheerfully as you can, just because. The wonder and mystery of Christianity is that it will survive all our mistakes, all our pride and all our prejudices. There is a power in following Jesus. You know, all of this is quite mysterious. It's like water, but there is a power. The power that made those first disciples drop their nets. The power that made Mary reach out to Jesus. And then the three of them, Mary, Martha, and Jesus, together grieved the death of Lazarus. The power that keeps you here, coming here on a Sunday. I'm sure some of you would much rather be home reading the Times or whatever you would want to do or going for brunch, and you're here. You're here because that power cannot be killed. What is it? How do we describe it? It's the unbounded mercy of God. That is what we believe in, and nothing can destroy that. The gospel, the story of God who came through Jesus who loved without bounds, who forgave without reservation, this Jesus who had no categories. This Jesus who said that you and I have the power to do the same. Redemption is ours too. Because if a bigot like Alma White or even a troubled Adam Lanza cannot destroy the light that shines in all their darkness, maybe we can't either. We have a candle burning, and soon these little candles here will be burning too. And you know, it's very symbolic on a day like today because these candles are like our stories, you know, the stories that we carry with us. What's interesting is we have a light, and that light can't be put out within us. And yet, when the candle burns, there's always a little bit of debris in the bottom. There's always debris left. So like the candles, when we open ourselves to God's grace, we melt and we are formed into something new. We are formed into a window of God's love. And that's wonderful. But at the bottom of the candle, we have to remember that the residue, those burnt bits of our life, of our humanity, remain.